as always on Thursdays, we are going to start with some parsha today. This week's parsha, of course, is most known as the parsha that tells us the story of Noach. But if you don't want to talk about the story of Noach, secondarily, it's also the famous story of, so everyone always says, Migdal Bavel, right? But that's the other major story in the parsha. There is a third story in the parsha that's about to emerge and serves to really shape the unique character of Klal Yisrael even more than the Mabul and even more than Migdal Bavel, which obviously were both critical to world history, but as far as being critical to and unique to Jewish history is really the third element of the parsha, and that is that at the very end of the parsha we're introduced to Avraham Avinu and to Sarah Imenu, and it's a narrative obviously that really gets into full swing next week. But it's important to note that it starts this week. The introduction starts this week. And the pasuk tells us that the story of Avram and Sarah and their descendants really almost ended before it even began. Vatihi Sarah Akara ein lavlad. She was an Akara. She didn't have any children. She was barren. She didn't have ein lavlad means not only she didn't have any children, she didn't have the potential to have children. She didn't have a uterus. She was completely barren without even potential to have children. And the Medrash comments, Amar Rabbi Levi, b'kol makom shenemar ein la, havi la. The Rabbi Levi tells us, whenever the Torah says ein la, it always ends up happening. Havi la. V'atihi sara akara ein la vlad, havi la. V'ashem pakara sara. It says ein la vlad, that Sarah had no children, and then it turns out, Hashem pakara sara. Tzion hi dorish ein la. The Navi tells Yirmiyahu that Tzion hi dorish ein la, that there's no one to be dorish Tzion, and then havi la. And then sure enough, what happens? Uvalitzion goel, that there comes a gula. So the Medrash seems to be pointing out an irony, that when the Torah, or in this case, in the case of Yerushalayim, the Navi Yirmiyahu says that something isn't, it turns out to become anyway. So what's the message, right? The message of the Medrash can't be that it's telling us that the Pesukim are lying to us, or that Hashem or the Navi couldn't predict what would ultimately become. No, there's got to be something to this Medrash, that whenever it says Ein Lo, Havi Lo. Whenever it says it's not going to be, then it is going to be. So there's a wonderful Sefer written by Rabbi Yisachar Shlomo Teichtal, who is sort of a hero in modern Orthodoxy, I guess, or in the Dati Lumi community. He's most famous for authoring, many circles, he's most famous for authoring the Sefer, the great Sefer, Eim HaBanim Smecha, where he outlines his reasons for breaking with his family and community's tradition in attitude toward Zionism and subscribing to a very strongly Zionist viewpoint. But really, he was a Rav who spent most of his rabbinic career doing what Rabbanim do, paskening shailas and saying drushes. And he therefore has beautiful svarim of Piskei Halacha and of drush on the Parsha. So in his Chuvas Mishnah Sachir, yeah, you see him in B'kol Kocho as a posek, and in his Drushas Mishnah Sachir, you see B'kol Kocho as a darshan. So in his Drushas on the Chumash, Rav Teichtal suggests several approaches to this medrash, but one of which I wanna share with you today. In fact, he has two approaches that he says. He writes in the Sefer that he shared Shabbos morning as a drasha, and then when he came back Shalosh Shuvos, he thought of another Mahalich in the same Medrash and shared that at Shalosh Shuvos. I don't know if that was always his style to use the same Medrash as a starting point for both the Shabbos morning drasha and Shalosh Shuvos. It's a good shtick if it was, but that was that's what he did. So I'm going to share with you his Shabbos morning drasha. Maybe we'll save the Shalosh Shuvos drasha for some other time. Rav Teichtal suggests an approach based on an understanding of the Medrash in Psikto Zutrasa, which states, Yeshuas Hashem Keheref Ayin, right? The Pasuk of Yeshuas Hashem Keheref Ayin. So that's typically understood to mean that Kodesh Baruch Hu's Yeshua comes very quickly. That, like out of nowhere, all of a sudden it happens and it's done. And that's sometimes true, but very often that's not really how Yeshuas Hashem happens. It very often doesn't happen in the blink of an eye. Very often, it's a process, and a really slow process. Most of us look at the Jewish people returning to Eretz Yisrael as a very critical first step in the process of Geula, or at least hope that that's the case. But when you see what's happening and how it's always two steps forward, one step back. And it doesn't always, doesn't happen. Rabbi J.J. Shachter likes to talk about this, about how we always imagined Geula was going to be like, you know, flying on the wings of eagles, and that's how we're going to get our soul back, and then it's all going to happen in a moment. And then, like, we have, like, this beginning of Geula kind of thing that's just taking decades and decades and decades and making major advancements. I mean, the amount of Talmud Torah happening here at Shul, having a Jewish government that Torah, you know, works its way deeper and deeper into Israeli society and culture. I mean, all of that is happening, and there's a kibbutz golios going on under our noses. We're Rov Yisrael, Rov Yoshve Aleha, pretty much, or we're almost there at Rov Yoshve Aleha. There's a lot happening, but it's happening very, very slowly. 70 years and counting, you know, so we've made a lot of progress, but it's not really keheref ayin. Can you describe that as being like in the blink of an eye? You know, I remember when we first left yeshiva at the beginning of Corona. I remember the last time I left yeshiva, I had no idea that I wasn't coming back the next day. I was ready to come back to yeshiva that morning that we were supposed to, where Penner made the announcement in the Beis Medrash first, that, you know, okay, everything's fine, everyone stay, and then, like, everyone run for your lives. Like, you know, like, there was this great confusion as, like, what was going on. So we had this feeling, okay, we're going to shut down our shuls now, we're shutting down the yeshiva now, and we'll come back in 2 weeks, we'll come back in a week, you know, when all this settles down. And when we come back, we're going to come back in full force, and we're going to dance, and we're going to, you know, have the whole Olam together, and it's going to be, like, a huge celebration. And, like, we didn't realize that's not really the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned it. The way it was going to be is there was going to be outdoor minyanim, distanced, masked, and then and some of those minyanim are then going to get a little larger, not just 10 people, a little bit more, and slowly, and then there's going to be a vaccine, hopefully, God willing, soon, and it's going to roll out, and first certain people are going to get it, then others, and then more trust, and then, and eventually, We'll hopefully get back to a point where we can have what we envisioned, but it's a slow process. Yeshuas Hashem doesn't always really happen keheref ayin. So what does it mean Yeshuas Hashem keheref ayin? So if Tektal suggests based on the Medrash that perhaps Yeshuas Hashem keheref ayin means something else entirely. Maybe it means that the salvation comes when you stop looking for it. Keheref ayin doesn't mean the blink of an eye. It's more similar to the phrase Haref Yadecha from Shmuel Beis, Parak Chav Dalet, in the context of Hashem telling the Malach HaMashchis to put an end to the Dever that David had chosen as his punishment. What does it mean, put an end? So Haref means to stop, to stay your hand, hold it back, meaning don't use it anymore. Haref Ayin means when you stop looking for it, that's when it's going to come. When you think that it can't happen anymore, that's when it happens. It's not a statement about the speed of Yeshuas Hashem. It's a statement about the timing of Yeshuas Hashem. When you think it can't happen anymore, that's the Yeshuas Hashem. Sarah's Ein Lavlad, she's an Akara. Ein Lavlad, it's only when she discovers that she's absolutely an Akara, she doesn't even have a uterus, Havilah. Then she's going to have a Vlad. When Sion he Dorish Einla, it seems hopeless. There's not going to be anyone being Dorish Sion. Sion is long gone. There's no reason to assume things are going to get better. Then Yeshuas Hashem begins. When we hit rock bottom for the Jewish people and we can't even imagine something positive happening for the Jewish people, like a Holocaust. There's no such thing as like a Holocaust. This is an unprecedented and unparalleled event. The Holocaust. We can't imagine anything. And then Yeshuas Hashem happens. Right when you stop looking for it. That's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam operates. And perhaps the explanation of that, or at least part of the explanation of that, is that as long as we can logically explain how it's going to happen, we place our faith in it happening in places other than the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. If we have a logical explanation, oh, I see how this can work. So we start to think of it in terms of those other ways of achieving the Yeshua, from whatever we need a Yeshua. You know, the idea has to be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds when we recognize that Ein Lanu Al Mi L'Hisha'ein, that there's no one else to trust, only the Ribbono Shel. We learn, you know, the paradigm of tefillas, tefillas chana, the Gemara Maseches Brachos, and all the halachas of tefillah from chana. What was the kunz of tefillas chana? Is that the psukim tell us, right before chana went to Davin, that Elkanah, her husband, said, you know what, enough. My love for you is greater than 10 sons. It doesn't matter. So you won't have children, but you have me, and you have my love, and you have our relationship, and I'll do whatever I can for you. And that's when she died. Because the moment she realized that her husband had given up, that there was nowhere else to turn, that there's only the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's when a tefillah is listened to. I don't know if you saw the clip that was going around of Avram Shor. Shlita spoke recently, I guess, and he was talking about how the phrase Pnei Hador Ki Pnei HaKelev, that in Ikvas of the Mashiach, the face of the generation is going to be Kipnei HaKelev. He says, that Rishol Salanter said, what does it mean, Kipnei HaKelev? Why like a dog? Why is it dogs have long faces? So in what way is it like a dog? And Rishol Salanter said, because if you take a stick and you hit a dog, the dog starts jumping at the stick, chasing after the stick. Because the dog doesn't see that there's a person at the other end of the stick, or he doesn't make that connection. The stick is what hit him, so he's jumping after the stick. In the Ikvus of the Mashiach, the Pnei Ador is Kepnei HaKelev. When there's things that happen that are not to our liking, that are not according to plan, that are causing a great amount of suffering, we jump after that thing, forgetting that it's connected to somebody, forgetting that there's a Ribbono Shel Olam that's causing all of that. The Ribbono Shel Olam responds. The Ribbono Shel Olam brings Yeshua Keheref Ayin. When we stop looking at those things and we start really looking at where it all comes from, that it comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the only way to do that, or the way that the tried and true way that we know throughout all of Jewish history and through Halacha, that we do that, that we reach out to the Ribbono Shel Olam, that we connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam, is through tefillah. And that's why this pandemic, it's one of the reasons that this pandemic has been so challenging. Because that's how we respond. We respond with tefillah. And right when it hit, tefillah b'tzibur was taken away from us. So the very way that we respond, we lost. So like we were trying to fight this and be inspired with both hands tied behind our back. We didn't know what to do. But you know something? Tefillah's come back. Tefillah b'tzibur has come back. The option of tefillah b'tzibur has come back. There are rabbanim throughout the country that are terribly nervous that people haven't come back. Not like people who are high risk or particularly nervous. No, people who are very happy to go to the gym and the supermarket and everywhere else. But they're also happy in the neighbor's backyard minyan. They're not so interested in coming to shul. People are very nervous about that. The rabbanim that are very nervous about that. Will shul ever make a comeback? I'm not particularly nervous about that. It's just not the matzias in my neighborhood. But I'll tell you something else that hasn't come back. Tefillah hasn't really come back, in my estimation. Based on, I don't know if you're seeing something different. Yeah, it's happening. There's tefillah b'tzibur. There's davening. There's scheduled davening, and we're saying the words. And there's kaddish and kedusha. But it's so perfunctory. Have you seen an intensity in tefillah? Have you seen like a passion in tefillah? Have you heard a cold tefillah? Okay, it's hard to do a cold tefillah with a mask. You know what? It's hard to give an hour long shiur with a mask also. But we do it. It's hard to learn a 3-hour Seder with a mask also, but you do it. Have you heard a cold tefillah? It's like dead silent. Everyone's so excited. Oh, there's no talking in shul. You're supposed to talk in shul. You're supposed to talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. There's mamish, no talking in shul. No one's talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam either. And that's like, that's what we really need. Tefillah be'is tzara l'kulei almas d'oraisa. You know how excited we get when we have an opportunity to do a mitzvah d'oraisa? It could be that for your entire life, for my entire life, we never really had an eis tzara. It could be we never really had a tefillah d'oraisa. Personal eis tzara, okay. But an eis tzara l'Yisrael, an eis tzara for the world, we never really had. And now we have an opportunity where we have tefillah d'oraisa each and every day. you know, excited I get, you know, about the Tcheles, that we lost this mitzvah d'oraisa for all these years, now we have an opportunity, possibly, that it's a new mitzvah d'oraisa that we're able to do. So we get all excited. How careful people are to look at their esrog for Yom Rishon, for the mitzvah d'oraisa. Not this year, but... because we're so excited that now we have the opportunity to do a mitzvah d'oraisa. And tefillah, it's become d'oraisa, l'kulei olma. And it seems that it hasn't returned. It seems that there's a lack of intensity. And that's something that we need to, I think we need to work on a little bit. More than a little bit. You know, because it's no more dangerous to daven with serious kavana and with deep passion than it is to daven the way we've been davening, in terms of physically dangerous. But spiritually, ain't no dome. So Rav Teichtal tells us, Yeshuas Hashem keherefayim. Keherefayim means not only what we stop looking at, that we stop looking for all the other answers and where all the other answers are going to come from, and our yeshivas are going to open because of this lawsuit and that lawsuit or whatever else, whatever other things people are busying themselves with. But it's what we start looking at, that we start looking and realizing that it all comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay.